And I understand, talking to you before this interview, the story of the 22nd of September starts for you two, or for your family, two or three days before that.
Yes, a few days before, our daughter Eileen, who was 20 at the time, had arranged to go up to Edinburgh to see her cousins up there for a few days. While she was up there, my wife was due to go into hospital on the Thursday, the day before the bombing, for an operation, which she would have been in the hospital for at least 4 or 5 days. And we didn't want to tell our daughter this because we knew she would cancel her trip to Scotland. So we said nothing to our daughter, and off she went to Edinburgh, and we carried on with life. And on the Thursday, the day before the bombing, I took Rena into Dover Hospital for the operation she was due to have on the Friday morning. That Thursday evening, I had to go into barracks because it was the first rehearsal of the forthcoming annual Sergeant's Mess pantomime, of which I'd been a member of the cast for a few years. That evening, I think the rehearsal started at 7:30 in the Sergeant's Mess in South Barracks. I probably got to the gate about 7:15 to drive in. The security guards at the gate, which were by then a civilian security company, not Royal Marines, took a long time inspecting cars entering the barracks for whatever reason we didn't know, but normally it was quite a quick to get in. But this particular night, I remember sitting at the gate for a good 10 minutes waiting to go in while they checked bonnet, boot, underneath, everything, which I thought at the time was a little bit unusual. And of course I got in for the rehearsal in the Science Mess a few minutes late. Made my apologies, and then we got on with the first rehearsal for the forthcoming pantomime, which was due to start the following January. Having finished the rehearsal, went back home. So then, the next morning, I got up, made myself breakfast, and getting ready to go to work. I worked in Canterbury at that time, as chief clerk at the headquarters of what then was the Queen's Regiment, regimental headquarters. I was in my bedroom at home. I was a little bit late, getting ready to go to work, just after 8:20, when I heard the enormous bang, and our bedroom faces away from the barracks, and I thought the bang had been perhaps a boat had pulled up a mine or something from the sea and had been detonated on the beach, which happened every now and again, and carried on getting dressed and drove towards Canterbury. Going along the Sandwich bypass, the first thing I saw actually was a ambulance and the fire engine heading towards a still from Sandwich direction. And then on the car radio I'd heard that there'd been an explosion at the barracks in Dill. They thought it was a gas explosion from the boiler house in North Barracks. Having served there for many years, I knew for a fact there was no gas there at all, but it still could have been a boiler explosion. And as news items kept coming on the local news started 10 minutes every 5 minutes, and every couple of minutes, some quite major disaster had happened. I got to Canterbury, went into work. I had a radio at work, so I immediately put that on, and the reports were getting more and more precise. And at about 9:20, I had a phone call. It was my wife ringing me from Dover Hospital saying, "You have got to come to Dover Hospital to pick me up to take me home, because they need all the beds for an emergency at the barracks." So I promptly packed everything away, told my superior officers where I was going, and they said, "Yes, off you go." And I drove straight down to Dover and picked my wife up. All the time listening to these radio broadcasts, which became more and more appalling as the morning went on. Picked my wife up, drove her back to Dill, and she said, "Well, if you take me home," she'd already incidentally had her pre-med injections for the operation before they told her that she'd have to go home. So on the way home she said, "If you take me home, I'll get into my St. John uniform and we'll go down to the barracks, see if we can be of any help to anyone for any reason," which is what we did. I guess we probably got down to the barracks round about between 10:30, 11 o'clock. We went straight to the Sergeant's Mess because that's where we were told that all the families were going who had husbands, sons, or whatever involved. So we went straight to the sergeant's mess, and my wife immediately started consoling people who we knew, some we didn't know, many we didn't know. Well, we both spent the rest of the day in the sergeant's mess doing anything we could, basically for the families.
Can I ask a couple of questions? Well, first of all, the night before, when you were saying it was quite difficult to get into the barracks, did you ever discover why that might have been?
No. There was a lot of speculation that someone must have had a tip-off or something, but I don't believe that was the case at all. I rather think perhaps whoever was in charge of the security at the gates perhaps realised that the guards weren't inspecting the cars as thoroughly as perhaps they should. That's the only thing I can surmise about that.
And tell me, Rena, over at the hospital, what was the first indication you knew that something...
The first we knew was one of the other ladies that was having an operation on that day. She said, my daughter's rung up to say that she's all right. I said, what do you mean she's all right? She said there'd been some sort of explosion in Canada Road. They thought it was the barracks, and she lived in Canada Road. With that, the ward sister put the television on, and of course we're getting all sorts of messages coming across on that. And then she came in and said, I'm sorry ladies, we'll have to send you home. You need the beds, we're expecting casualties. At which stage I burst into tears. I got soundly told off for being selfish because my operation had been cancelled. And I said to her, I've not been selfish. Me and my friends have probably just been injured. And I was in the right state until Molly came to pick me up. And I really couldn't wait to get down there. I didn't think I'd be able to do much because obviously the professionals were there by now. But I thought we did what we could. The Red Cross were down there as well. It was a joint effort really between the Red Cross and the St John doing what could. We couldn't do very much. I mean, all we could do was sit there, talk to people, try and reassure them. The awful thing was, because of Molly, I mean, he was getting news that day, we didn't know. And he said, this one's just been killed, this one's in the hospital. And it was terrible trying to sit there and talk to somebody, reassure them, knowing that you'd just been told that their son, husband, father was actually one of the casualties.
What was it when you went down to the barracks with Wally, having gone home and changed? Because you were in uniform, were you immediately accessed? Because I have spoken to other people who said how difficult it was.
It was difficult. There was a cordon. I think if I hadn't been in uniform, we would have got nowhere near it. It was really tight, the security.
And had the St John's Ambulance, other members of the...
The other members had gone in. The John Spencer and Dave Nuttall, I know for a fact, were there. They both were shift workers. I didn't actually see them in the mess, so I presumed that they were still over on the actual site, because they wouldn't let any women over there.
Did the St John's Ambulance deploy into the barracks?
They did. Yeah. They did.
And did you set up a sort of St John's centre?
No, yeah. We helped the ambulance service. Yeah. That is one of our functions. I mean, we do it all the time, especially in the winter. We go in where we're needed. We're a backup.
Right, in support.
In support.
Right.
And we just basically did as we were told.
But quite clearly from what you've said, your role at that stage was sort of to be on hand to comfort and...
Comfort and support. That was all I could do. Yeah. I mean, I desperately wanted to go across and do what I could first aid-wise, but that wasn't allowed, so we did the other thing.
And Wally, were you there at the same time in the mess?
I spent the whole day in the mess. As I say, we knew, well, I certainly knew, probably more than Rena did, the wives and families of those that had been killed or injured. It was a very difficult time. Of course, as I alluded to earlier, our daughter had been in Edinburgh, had heard on the news about this explosion in Deal, and of course promptly tried to ring her mother at home, where she would have thought she'd either be at home or at work. There's no answer from home, so she rang the school where Rena was secretary. And of course the school said, oh no, your mother's in hospital. So this, of course, upset our daughter. So she rang where I worked to be told, no, I'd gone to the hospital. Eventually, we managed to get through to her and told her what had happened. And of course, as I referred to the pantomime, my daughter used to do the makeup for the pantomime. So she knew more than half of those that were involved in the actual bombing. So she immediately said her goodbyes to her cousins in Edinburgh, got in her car and drove all the way back down to Deal, arriving very late that night.
I should think Mum and Dad got what might be termed in service a bit of a telling off.
Yes, we did rather. But
the first thing she wanted to do was to get some flowers and lay them outside the gate, which by that time, later that evening, there was a huge amount, bunches of flowers and wreaths and messages, etc.
How long did you both stay there that day?
Which late evening was it? We stayed there until they got the last one out, didn't we?
The last confirmed death was at 5 p.m. if I remember rightly, and Rena was with his mum and dad. It was confirmed that he was the last one to be identified.
And had they been a bit hopeful that he might be just wounded, or were they pretty sane?
Everybody was hopeful, but everybody had that feeling that as time went on especially, that it wasn't going to be a good outcome.